Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Man, do I have a show for you today. I mean, you know, how much news can you cram into 1 week? It's just kind of nonstop, the loony left, the violent left, the immigration, you know, the ongoing nonsense in Congress. It just goes on and on and on. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Because there's a couple things that I really want to get to. I want to get to the next mind control segment. And by the way, there's going to be one next week, too. I've uncovered, a bunch of stuff. It's absolutely mind-boggling. So today, we're going to I'm going to go over the kind of the history of this mind control thing, which is really fascinating. And you know, all the hue and cry about the Russians? Guess where we got a lot of our stuff? The Russians. Amazing. Not only that, not covertly, but overtly. That's right, Russian-American cooperation on mind control, or psychotronic weaponry, as the Russians call it. Anyway, that's going to be pretty fascinating. I think you'll agree after you hear the segment. And then I'm going to go over, I'll tell you what, there really is. There's so much news that nobody else is covering, as usual, that I'm going to do kind of a rat-a-tat-tat of a whole bunch of stories. Some of this press hypocrisy, and it's not just on immigration, folks. It's like on everything. I mean, the press has become unhinged. The left has become unhinged. This immigration thing with fake pictures of kids, pictures from the Obama era of 2014, passed Office of Trump stuff, complete glossing over of the fact that, do you know who signed the law that separated families in 1997? Oh, that's right, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton signed that into law. Oh, my. And Obama carried it out, by the way, under conditions far worse than Trump's. And then we're going to go over, well, it's just like a never-ending list. So rather than spend 10 minutes and tell you the list, I'm just going to get into it. And, of course, I'm going to have my story for you. And I'm going to give you an update on the saga with Indeed.com, you know, the online job search, employer, job applicant, matching service. So I think you'll find that kind of interesting. And there's a moral to that story, too, as you're going to see. And then we're going to talk a little bit about some revelations that have now come to light buried in this IG report. A couple of them are just going to make your eyes cross. As you know, although I'm not going to spend any time other than right now on this, Congress supposedly is going to be passing resolutions to hold Rosenstein and Ray in contempt. And by the way, did anybody see the testimony in front of the Senate and House committees with Ray and the IG, Horowitz? Painfully sat through part of each one of those. And you know, I brought up to you last week that I was really disturbed by Ray's, the head of the FBI, who, by the way, is not a lawman. He's a former DOJ attorney like Mueller and like Comey, Dirty Cop Comey. He's like oblivious. He just doesn't accept that all this stuff is going on. I don't think he cares. I think his mission is to protect the deep state. I think he is the deep state personified. I think he and Rosenstein, who is a deep state scoundrel, are perfectly matched. I mean, the whole cluster of them are perfectly matched. And I have another little story for you, which I think you'll find very amusing. Did you ever think about where the name Slush Fund came from? Well, I'm gonna tell you this morning. Before I get started on all this stuff, oh, and I'm also going to have a pretty important segment on the emerging market debt crisis, which has begun, folks. You know, I did that show, 2 months ago, big response, the Canaries in the Economic Mine. If you have not listened to it, you should. The show in the week after brought some more little, should we say, red flags that you need to keep your eyes out for, running the economic red flags running up the flagpole. And this is for your safety. You know, you'll notice on the website, for those of you who follow the articles, and I hope all of you at least take a look at them and grab a few that catch your interest and read them, because there's a wealth of information in those articles that the producers post every week. www.ontherightsideradio.com. They're all categorized. Anything to do with tech and Google and Microsoft and the rest of the clowns playing censorship games, Facebook, is under Constitution because it goes right to your constitutional rights. And you'll see the various categories. The women category, by the way, pretty much has family stuff, education stuff, etc. The family safety category has some good, hard, physical family safety articles. And I've also started putting some of these economic articles under family safety because, let's face it, your safety is not only physical, but it's also financial. And you need to be aware of what's going on out there in the world, and nobody, and I mean nobody, is bringing it to you. So that's my job, the news behind the news, folks. And those of you who have been listening to me for a long time know that my prognostications, usually, unfortunately, are quite correct. So, look, without further ado, let's get into this show, because we got a bunch to cover. The last segment, by the way, I'm going to digress one more second. The last segment is going to be this segment on China. What you don't know about China, which I think will startle you. I'm going to save that for last because that's kind of an evergreen story. It's not going to change much between now and next week or the week after, whenever I get to that segment. And I'm going to, so I don't get run over by radio stations. I'm going to try and limit this show to the 2 hours. Last week was a particularly long show. Okay. Anyway, let me get started. Number one, Indeed.com. Last week I told you about this really annoying experience I had with Indeed.com. Lack of response, their supposed quality control team, you know, didn't get back to me, had me submit a bunch of stuff. I mean, the advertisements say, oh, you'll have your, as an employer, your job will be posted in minutes. Well, folks, it took 6 days. However, there is a silver lining to this story. So I got upset enough that I called the headquarters in Stamford, Connecticut, and I got a guy by the name of Travis, who I guess is working out of their Austin office. Travis was terrific. He jumped into the fray. He earmarked, bookmarked, whatever he did with my pitiful attempt to try and post this job. And he was terrific. He gave me his email address. We were able to communicate. You know, it makes such a difference. This is kind of moral number one, to have a human to talk to, a person who is empathetic and is competent. Anyway, to make a long story short, Travis finally rammed home getting this ad placed and online. And yes, we've had some applicants, and some of them seem pretty good. And some interviews scheduled. But the moral of this story for Indeed, by the way, the quality control people who are supposedly check whether or not you're legit when you're posting a job, or you're legit, I suppose, if you're an applicant, who knows what they do on that side, they remain terrible. But everybody else I have dealt with at Indeed.com, Travis put me in touch with somebody else who helped me change some things. They were good. And the overall moral of the story is that the person-to-person contact is ever so important in anything you do. And I don't mean just customer service, company to customer. I'm just talking about person-to-person. Because this guy was able to, and let me tell you, I was boiling mad. This guy was able to calm me down. He was able to take concrete steps. He was able to keep me informed of the process. And in the end, he was able to get it done. So, if anybody from Indeed.com, any of you high mucky mucks are listening, this kid, I assume he's in his 20s, maybe early 30s, this kid deserves a big bonus because he did a yeoman's job. So, that's the update on Indeed.com. If you listened to my show last week, you know I was not a happy clam. Let me tell you another little story. So, somewhere in the 1600s, let's say 1635, give or take 10 years, doesn't really matter, the Dutch, you know, the Spanish, the French, and the English were all busy fighting wars, sinking each other's ships, invading each other's countries. You know, it was like the war that continued forever and ever between those three countries. The Dutch, they got smart, kind of like the merchants in the gold rush. They didn't bother to pan for gold. They just sold the fools that were panning for gold all the stuff they needed to pan for gold. The Dutch said, okay, we're not going to get into this mess. What we're going to do is we're going to build a fleet of merchant ships, and we're going to supply everybody with what they need to kill each other. And the Dutch did a great job of it. Anyway, the way the Dutch did it was because, you know, if the Dutch ship made it through with its cargo to wherever port it was going, they didn't play any favorites. They'd sell to France, they'd sell to Spain, they'd sell to England, they'd sell to anybody. But if the ship made it through, then the crew, supposedly, was going to share in the loot. And that's how they kept the pay of the crew to a bare minimum, because it was a promise of this big payoff when the cargo was delivered. Anyway, it seems that some of the Dutch ship captains or some of the Dutch shipping companies decided perhaps to cook the books, as it were, when it came to splitting up the profits of the ship's haul. And the sailors kind of got wise to this. One of the things that the merchant seamen were given was a ration of pork. And the pork, they got a certain amount of pork. Whether they ate it all or not didn't matter. But the pork, what the sailors figured out is that the pork they didn't eat, they could stow. And they would stow all this extra pork. They basically starve themselves so that they would have pork. And pork, particularly this type of fatty pork that they were using on sea voyages, was great for tallow, you know, making tallow for candles and all that kind of stuff. And a lot of the ports that they went to had a shortage of the materials needed to make candles and other things that tallow makes. To make a long story short, the seamen figured out that they could sell the tallow by more or less starving themselves on this voyage for 10 times more than it was worth and have quite a payday. And the tallow was called slush. Yes. You know, make candles and all that kind of stuff. And basically the premium that was paid for the slush or the residual pork that the sailors kept became known as the slush fund. And that, folks, is how slush fund came into lexicon. I thought that was kind of a fascinating little historical tale. Now, we're going to go into our rat-a-tat-tat. Number one, I got a bunch of emails from libs and progressives and some really nasty people who appear to be left-leaning, or should I say tilted left. And they were all upset over my story last week, my segment last week, on the suspicious murders of Seth Richards, the DNC IT guy, and then the IT guy that he worked with. Both of them supposedly robberies, nothing taken from their bodies. I've talked about this story a number of times. The WikiLeaks connection, WikiLeaks offering reward for Seth Richards' murder. WikiLeaks repeated statements that they did not get the DNC emails from any state actor, in other words, not from the Russians, et cetera, et cetera. Well, I got all these nasty grams saying, oh, well, you're accusing Hillary Clinton. Actually, I didn't accuse Hillary Clinton, but you could certainly draw the inference. And by the way, this morning I'm going to tell you about two more victims of Hillary Clinton. They happen to be FBI agents. And they're very recent. And they have to do with testimony that these FBI agents were going to render against the Clinton Foundation. I'll leave that as a little titillator for you. Anyway, as further substantiation of the, shall we say, strange circumstances surrounding the death of these two young IT workers at the DNC, you know that the DNC refused to allow the FBI to come in and conduct a forensic review of the DNC server. Instead, the DNC hired this private Democratic firm called CrowdStrike. And supposedly they created replicas of the server's data and provided that to the FBI. One of the things we found out in the last week is they then destroyed the server. Gee, now that kind of fits right in with Hillary, right? Pounding her phones and her computers into little bits. Bleach bit, erasure, you name it. Anyway, so CrowdStrike was called in. By the way, they were paid $98,000 by the DNC the day after, let me emphasize this, the day after Seth Richards' murder. Seth Richards gets murdered. The day after CrowdStrike is called in, the FBI is told they cannot investigate the DNC server. CrowdStrike is paid $98,000. Supposedly, CrowdStrike makes a replica of the information on the DNC server and then destroys the DNC server. Now, tell me, folks, what set of coincidences do you really want to believe here when we all know there are no coincidences? By the way, do you know how the DNC honored Seth Richards, their head IT guy who was murdered? Oh, yeah, they bought a bike rack, folks, and put it outside their building. You have a Seth Richards bike rack. How nice. How empathetic, you know, these Dems that run around screaming about the kids at the border. All right, that's the first rapid-fire piece of information I have for you this morning. Next, you know, everybody was on Trump because he shouldn't pull out from the Paris Accord. We now found out, because a new study's just come out, that India is the most polluted country in the world. Respiratory diseases in India are above anything, even above respiratory diseases in China. And for those of you who are in the know, you know that Chinese air in Chinese cities is, shall we say, less than healthy. How's that? However, under the Paris Accord, this is kind of like the Iran deal, isn't it? Under the Paris Accord, India and China, the United States had to start sacrificing right away to the tunes of trillions of dollars and all sorts of things that would have affected your life. But China and India, the two most polluted countries in the world, India at number one, they had 30 years to implement their part of the deal. Sure, I'm sure that in year 29 they would get really busy. You betcha. Next little tidbit I have for you. Let's talk about immigration a little bit. First of all, this immigration thing is, you know, we all know what it's really about. It has nothing to do with the kids, has nothing to do with the immigrants, has nothing to do with the illegal aliens, it has nothing to do with anything other than votes and power and money and control. That's what it's all about. And the Democrats got out-trumped by Trump once again. Trump signs the executive order saying, okay, this is illegal because it's a law signed by Clinton that I'm enforcing, But I'm going to sign an executive order that the kids are not going to be separated from the parents. Instead, we're going to detain all the families. The whole nine yards. They all get detained together. Well, the left goes ballistic. So all the nonsense about the kids was nonsense. What they really wanted was like this policy of catch and release like Obama had. How did we get to where we're at? Okay, so in 1997, this is after Clinton signs the deal saying separate kids from parents from when there's an illegal border crossing. By the way, another thing the press got wrong on this, do you know that if you show up with your kids, quote-unquote, seeking asylum, at any border checkpoint, then your kids will not be separated from you. However, if you show up at anywhere but a border checkpoint, they will be. So why are all these illegal aliens trying to cross the border, when this is very clear, trying to cross the border at places other than legal checkpoints? We'll have to ask ourselves that question. Another study that came out, by the way, is 13% of these kids have no relationship whatsoever with the adults that are accompanying them. In other words, it's all a big scam. Another statistic that came out this week is that 80% of all the children coming across the border are unaccompanied. They're not being separated from anybody. They were separated by their parents 1,800 miles to the south, months before they arrive at the United States border. In 1997, after Bill Clinton signs the Separate the Families, whatever name of the act was, there was a big court case, Flores versus Reno. That's Attorney General Janet Reno, if you don't remember that name. And the Supreme Court said it was unlawful to hold an illegal immigrant in a federal detainment, immigrant child in a federal detainment facility. That was a 9-year suit that had been going on against the government. However, the settlement ruled that unaccompanied minors that entered the U.S. legally must be released from INS custody without unnecessary delay. Then, the Ninth Circuit got into the act, and they ruled that unnecessary delay would be a time period over 20 days, which is where this 20-day rule comes from. You can only detain a kid that's come across the border illegally for a maximum of 20 days. In 2008, there was an act called the Wilberforce Act. This was signed by President George Bush. It was called, actually, the William Wilberforce Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2008. I just put myself to sleep saying that. This required officials to verify if adults who claimed to be the parents of minors were, in fact, the child's parents. And this law was supposed to protect minors from sex trafficking and coyotes and all that kind of good stuff, which, by the way, is going on today. That's the 13% of the children arriving at border with adults when they have no relationship to the adults whatsoever. 2016 is when the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that unnecessary delay was the 20 days. In January of 2017, Trump signs the executive orders, which basically threw out Barack Obama's illegal executive orders and kind of turned Obama's policies upside down. In April of 2018, Sessions, the Attorney General, comes out and says that as of right then, there would be a zero-tolerance policy for illegal entry into the United States. In May of 2018, we start seeing these photos of immigrant kids in cages. And then we find out that the photos were from 2014 in the Obama era. On June 8th, two weeks ago, Reuters runs this article. This is all so staged. This is all so manufactured. Reuters runs the article that 1,800 families have been separated at the U.S.-Mexico border in the 17 months through February. Then, June 15th through 17th, you remember the big uproar over Father's Day weekend, last weekend. And you remember that there's a picture of this two-year-old girl crying her eyes out that Time magazine actually put on the cover of their issue this week with a superimposed picture of Trump kind of towering over her. And everybody's been running this on the left with this picture, and this is so horrible, and this is a symbolic of these, what happens to these children when they're separated, except for one thing. It's all fake news. That child was with her mother. Let me underline this. With her mother at the time the picture was taken. She was actually questioned by a Border Patrol agency if the child was okay, and her response was, "We're just thirsty and hungry." The husband is a pretty highly paid guy in one of the ports in Mexico. He's kind of in management at the port. And when contacted, he said, "Listen, she said she wanted to go to America. You know, I can't stop her," and blah, 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 blah. But he confirmed that the child was never separated from the mother. In other words, the whole thing is staged fake news. Staged fake news. Unbelievable. And then on June 20th, 4 or 5 days after the brouhaha over that weekend, Trump signs this executive order, which schnookered the left totally, which basically says, okay, we're not going to separate illegal alien families, but we're going to detain the whole family together. In other words, we're continuing with our zero tolerance policy. So, that's a little history on this immigration deal that you probably didn't know, but you need to know. To continue with immigration, and we're on a machine gun pattern here this morning, let me tell you, because I got a lot of stuff to cover. There's a fire hose of fake news coming from the left and the left's mouthpiece, which is the media. There was actually one moron. In fact, he was on yesterday. He was on either MSNBC or CNN. I mean, who really cares? It's all six of one, half dozen the other. Left-wing fake news. And he actually said, and I'm paraphrasing, that this isn't about Trump. This is about the people who vote for Trump. And every one of the 61 million people who voted for Trump, they're the reason that these children have been separated at the border. They are Nazis. I mean, he called all of us Nazis. He called all of us racist. He called all of us every name in the book. Okay, this is how the left thinks of the American people, folks. This guy's discourse was like a clean breath of fresh air because it was an admission of what low esteem they hold anybody who has a viewpoint different than theirs, anybody who apparently works and pays taxes, anybody who, you know, is not an illegal alien coming across the border after towing a kid 1,800 miles across the desert, or picking up a stray kid that had been sent up unaccompanied by parents. There's no responsibility affixed to the parents of these children. I mean, folks, they made a choice. They made a choice to come to the United States illegally. Or they made a choice to send their kid unaccompanied illegally. By the way, the girls that are being sent up here are being supplied by their parents with birth control, including morning after pills, because they're pretty sure they're going to get raped along the way. Or sex trafficked along the way. I mean, the whole thing is just unbelievable. And when you know what's really going on, which is this is about votes. This is about fundamentally transforming the United States. Remember Barry's words? By changing the demographics. I've talked about this a million times. You change the demographics by diffusing the population's values with people who don't hold the values. Diffusing the population's cohesive tapestry with a foreign language, which is not the native tongue of the country. It is civilizational jihad. It is exactly what the Muslims are doing in Europe. That is what the American left, I wouldn't even call them American left, the left in America is doing to or trying to do to this country. I mean, it's an invasion is what it is. And it's an invasion aided and abetted by people who live in this country. In other words, people who consider themselves, I think, Americans. In the meantime, the press has just run wild. I gave you this one example of this two-year-old girl. The picture is plastered everywhere. And then we find out she wasn't separated at all, like her mother was standing right next to her when the picture was taken. The media has pretty much ignored 13 key items in this. Number one, Trump, in separating families, whatever you may think of that, that is the law that was signed by Bill Clinton, period. And Trump's job, and I'm sure he's doing it partially for political reasons too, but his job as a president is to enforce the laws on the books. Something that Barry didn't do. His only choice, this is number two, his only choice is to separate illegal alien families if they came in through any place other than a port of entry. I mean, think about it. You can't put adults with the kids' detention. I mean, 13% of the adults aren't even related to the kids. You can't put the kids in the adult detention facility. So the only safe, practical way to make sure the kids are cared for is to put them in their own facility. I mean, it's just common sense. You know, the left pretty much wants illegal aliens to enjoy privileges which are denied to American citizens. And, you know, you would have to say that that is point number three in this leftist media war over nothing. I mean, they're still carrying on, even though he signed the executive order to put these families back together and to not separate children anymore at the border, which, by the way, is going to be challenged in court and thrown out because you can't sign an executive order in place of having a law passed. And, of course, Congress is incapable of passing a law because the Democrats don't want a law passed. I mean, this is just too juicy a crisis for them to let go of. Asylum seekers, this is another press fake news thing. The truth is, asylum seekers not breaking the law are not being separated. And asylum seekers or folks trying to gain entry to the United States who come in at a designated port of entry are not being separated. This is a loophole. This is the other thing the press isn't telling you. This is a loophole, folks. This loophole that, you know, the children are like a get-in free card. And because of the Ninth Circuit, you can only hold them 20 days. So naturally, there's been a 400% increase over the last 3 years in the number of illegal entries or attempted illegal entries into the United States using kids as the shield. 400% increase. Okay, and this is all because of Congress. This is all because of Bill Clinton. It's all because of Democrats. I mean, it's really that simple. It ain't hard to figure it out. And it's on purpose. It's all on purpose. Obama and the Democrats, this is the next thing the press isn't telling you. They incentivize this family separation deal. Until Obama, folks, most illegal border crossings were primarily young, single men. Obama incentivized the idea of dragging minor children, you know, 1,800 miles through desert, drug lords, you name it, in Mexico, by making sure Central America knew about this policy of if you have a kid as a foil, you're going to get in. Of course, the media said, I don't even need to point this out to you, when Obama was separating families, like in 2014 when those pictures were taken, that everybody tried to pass off as Trump's, the media didn't say squat. Not squat. Then, of course, we have We have the media jumping up and down saying that the only way to unite families is to release them into America. So, you know, they're kind of showing their colors. Anyway, I'm not going to go on with the other 13 things because some of those you know, and otherwise we're kind of beating to death things. Here's the bottom line. Okay, the left doesn't care, folks. I don't know if you saw the heart-wrenching interviews of angel moms who lost daughters and sons to illegal aliens in all sorts of horrific ways over the last few days. But to put this in perspective to you, while the left is crying about 1,800 kids separated from families so that ICE can ascertain if they really are related, and so that the parents, many of whom are coming back into the country after being deported, which makes it a felony, others are crime, others are MS-13, so that the so-called parents can be thoroughly vetted and investigated and prosecuted and or deported, if that's what it calls for, because they are criminals or, shall we say, repeat offenders at the border. This whole thing... How do I say this gently? To show you what scumbuckets, that's about as gentle as I can be, what scumbuckets the left press is, which is most of the press, and the Democrats are. Have you heard one of them mention the fact that there are, guess, 4,300 deaths in the United States last year due to illegal aliens? That is, 4,300 American citizens died in one way, shape, or form. Drunk driving, traffic accidents, rape, beating, murder, you name it, at the hands of illegal aliens. So the left is crying about 1,800 kids who are housed in, you know, fairly comfortable, I mean, it's not freedom, but fairly comfortable facilities, given 3 square meals a day, medical, you name it, all on the United States taxpayer dime. While the left screams and yells about that, I have not heard one single person on the left mentioned the fact that 4,300 Americans died at the hands of or due to the acts or lack of acts of illegal aliens last year. 4,300. Now, I think we can all do the math on this. And I think we all can differentiate between a kid who is separated from their parents or the people who claim to be their parents for 20 days in a 3-square-meal-a-day, pretty comfy facility is a lot different than an American citizen being killed. But they say not a word, not a peep, do they say. Not a peep. In the meantime, while we're postulating, gesticulating, and, you know, tearing our heads out over in this country about illegal aliens and immigration and, you know, Nancy Pelosi citing scripture, which is, you know, that's quite a sight. Nancy Pelosi citing scripture. Over in Hungary, they have figured it out. And they're not going the rest of the way. You know, Hungary's Viktor Orban, he's the premier. This guy is like the Trump of Hungary. Number one, they've built a wall, which, by the way, works great. That's one of the reasons the left doesn't want it here. And number two, he's been jumping up and down about the undermining of Europe through civilizational jihad for years. The Hungarian parliament just passed a bill which basically makes it illegal and criminal to have anything to do with George Soros in Hungary, because they discovered that George Soros is funding this refugee immigrant crisis in Europe. Just as, by the way, George Soros is funding many of these absolutely off-the-wall leftist groups around the United States who are jumping up and down about this fake news story of the separated kids. Well, not a word is said about 4,300 Americans that died last year at the hands of illegal aliens. So, but let me give you an example of what's happening in Europe, because it is parallel to what's happening in the United States, just a different, shall we say, crowd of immigrants and supposed refugees. So Bosnia has seen arrivals, new immigrants, surge by 600 to 700% in recent months. Orban is warning that Europe should be bracing for signs of a new migration rise. Quote, of a rising tide following a low tide. It's rising now and this poses a challenge, unquote. We've managed to ensure that now every migrant knows that they shouldn't follow the path marked by the signpost pointing to Hungary. Stop Soros legislative package currently is passing through the Hungarian parliament. By the way, another thing you didn't hear about this last week, did you know that Sweden canceled one of their major music festivals? Because in the days leading up to the opening of the festival, there was like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rapes by so-called refugees of Swedish women. Gee, that didn't make it into the American news, did it? No. Mm-mm. And did you know that Merkel... Listen, there's all sorts of things going on over in Europe, but this is another little thing I was going to hit very quickly. Okay, Italy is in chaos. The left-wing government there has been pretty much taken over, or should we say diminished, or completely undermined by a surge in elections of two of the more nationalistic parties in Italy. And these parties in Italy, these parties that are now coming to power in Italy, where the government, they can't form a coalition to govern, but these parties that are coming to power want Italy to depart from the European Union and from the euro dollar, which, by the way, would be, you know, between England and Italy, the EU would pretty much cease to function. So, of course, the globalists and the elites are doing everything they can to stop it. There is, so what they're doing around Hungary, because it's walled off, they're rerouting, right? They're kind of go around Hungary. Hungary is kind of like this rock that splits the current in the stream of migration. You know, think about what a stream looks like. The water's coming down, hits a rock, and splits off to both sides. Well, where these migrants, these so-called refugees, these this Muslim civilizational jihad supported and funded by George Soros, it is going. They're going to Slovenia, they're going to Bosnia, and they're going to Austria. Those countries, and Montenegro, those countries are now talking about building walls to protect their borders. But you know those walls don't work. And then you have in Europe, at the same time that you have Italy kind of disintegrating, you have all sorts of things going on in Britain. I've told you a little bit about the National Health Service here in the past few months. This jailing, I didn't talk about it last week, but this jailing of this journalist who reports on Muslim extremism. His name is Tomlinson. You may have seen some stuff in social media about free him. I mean, basically, England threw him in jail for writing articles on radical Islam. And then they shipped him off to a prison, you're going to love this, that has a 62% Muslim population. I mean, you think this guy's going to get out of there alive? Do you think the government knows that? Well, I'll let you surmise. Orban, the guy from Hungary, talking about George Soros, who's behind a lot of this. Quote, we've played a role in this network being exposed. That's Soros' network. As we brought it out into the open, and now they have to openly state their goals. They want immigration. The replacement of populations and peoples is underway in Europe, partly because speculators like Soros can make large financial profits. They are set on the ruination of Europe because they're hoping for large profits. Kind of interesting, right? In the end, it all comes down to everything else that you see. Barack Obama touting his blackness when he didn't care at all about black Americans. As you can tell by the statistics, unemployment, food stamps, joblessness, you name it. The globalists who wring their hands over borders. And in many cases, big business who wants cheap labor. These people don't care about you, folks. The progressives don't care about you. The Islamists want you dead. I think the progressives might want you dead too, but they're willing to control you. I mean, you can live so long as you do what they say, think what they think, and don't say anything that's quote-unquote, in their mind, not right. Or should we say not left? Let's move on to the next thing. That's all I'm going to say about immigration, because that is a deal that's going to continue to play out over the coming weeks. I'm sure we'll be revisiting it again. So how many of you heard about the mass shooting in New Jersey? This was in the last week. 22 people shot. Did you hear the media jumping up and down about gun violence and, you know, mass shootings? And nope. In fact, the story was like completely buried, and it remains buried. So there were 22 people shot. Unfortunately, I think a few people died. Everybody else was injured. But it comes to turn out that, number one, this was not an attack with an assault weapon, as the media likes to call it. And number two, this wasn't the lone wolf that the media loves to point to. No, this was two illegal alien gang members shooting at one another and hitting a whole bunch of people in the crowd in the process. Gee, no wonder the media didn't cover that. By the way, it occurred in New Jersey, which has the second strictest state gun control laws in the United States. So that didn't play into the narrative either, because, you know, if you have gun control laws, you're supposed to have a lot less crime. I think we all know that, right? By the way, the names of the two gang members was Tahaj Wells, he was 32, and Amir Armstrong, age 43. Next thing we're going to cover. We're going to cover some more. We're going to cover the media and their panic over the North Korean summit. By the way, do you realize that the North Korean summit was just a week ago? 1 week ago. 1 week. The 12th. Week in 2 days. It's unbelievable. The Washington Post came out and talked about how Trump didn't do anything, and all the previous presidents did a lot more than he did. You know, okay, well, let's see. Bill Clinton signed the deal, gave North Korea $4 billion back there in the 1990s, all of which they used to develop nuclear weapons. He told us they were going to drop nuclear weapons, and here we are today. Okay. Vox, which is extreme left-wing but widely read amongst the left outfit, you know, they're basically West Coast progressive is what they are. Quote, from the get-go, the Trump administration wanted something North Korea was never going to give. The North handing over its entire nuclear arsenal before the United States gave it anything tangible is just not going to happen. Okay. Then there's the LA Times. They find fault with the agreement that Trump got done with Kim Jong-un. And by the way, I don't know if the agreement's going to be kept or not. The bottom line is this president got further than any other president by 10 miles. But anyway, they had to have something, you know, that they could hang their hats on, because Trump can't have a success, and he certainly can't have a success in a major foreign policy matter 3 months before the midterms, right? Right. By the way, as an aside, go to the politics section under the articles. Again, the producers have posted a number of candidates that are looking for your contributions. And there's some other kind of cool articles in there, too. Send some money, folks. November 2018 is but months away. And you really, 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 really don't want people in control of either the House or the Senate or both who don't like you, you 61 million Nazi sympathizers, you know, for voting for Trump. As this moron, I mean, moron on NBC, on MSNBC or CNN, who cares, stated yesterday. Yep, it's all your fault, folks. You voted for Trump, therefore, everything Trump does is your fault. You should be ashamed of yourself. You should be ashamed of yourself. Anyway, the LA Times, they had to get into the act, and they said that the agreement is meaningless, not worth the paper it's written on, because, quote, it does not offer the pledge of complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearization that Pompeo had insisted was the U.S. objective, unquote. This is after the LA Times not saying one word on the complete, let me underline, complete lack of action by Obama during his 8 years. Right? It's just unbelievable. CNN, good old CNN. What they implied was that there's, quote, lingering questions from the Trump-Kim summit, end quote. And they claim that Trump got schnookered, that we didn't get anything, and that all of this is that all of this is just Trump hyperbole, Trump false boasting, Trump lying about what happened, even about what the agreement that was signed. And you know, it's basically what was signed, folks, is an agreement to agree. All right. Let's get into the next thing. We find out from the IG report and the IG's testimony, this is unbelievable, that the so-called investigation by the so-called FBI and Dirty Cop Strzok and Dirty Cop Comey and all the other dirty cops over there, we find out that the Hillary investigation was a sham. I don't mean just a sham because of the letter being written months before she was interviewed, exonerating her. I'm sorry for these yawns, folks. I mean, it's early in the morning, and I've been going like crazy with water and all sorts of stuff here. So I'll try and keep them to a minimum. No subject and no target was ever identified in the so-called investigation of Hillary. Not her, not any of her staff, not anyone. Now, would somebody like to tell me how there's a criminal investigation of a person's action if the person's not named? In other words, this is just another glaring example, absolute truth, that the whole thing was a sham. And by the way, legal scholars are now saying that she could be hauled in again. The next thing that came out of this week was that, you know, the FBI, the reason that the IG report had FBI Agent 1 and FBI Agent 5 and FBI Attorney 2 and FBI Attorney 3, the IG testified, to make it kind of really easy for you, the IG testified that the FBI would not give the names because these were all counterintelligence agents. And they couldn't be disclosed, their identity. I mean, that could be very unsafe and detrimental to national security. And blah, 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 blah. Well, it comes to find out, thanks to Mark Meadows, who's a rather courageous Republican in Congress, that at least the two attorneys that were named, Attorney 2 and Attorney 3, whatever the IG called them, those folks were none other than, hold on to your hats, lawyers like working in everything but counterintelligence. So once again, our FBI is withholding information from those they are sworn to serve and protect, and those that pay them. Huh. Amazing. That assistant AG I was talking about last week happens to be one of them. And he was trying to get, you know, his son a job on Hillary's campaign. Oh, yeah, that's great. Super. One of the things that really struck me, this is the next little ditty for you, is that the Dems are jumping up and down. I heard an interview. Let me step back. I heard an interview over the course of the week, and there was like this foaming at the mouth lefty on there. And the commentator, I forget who it was, might have been Laura Ingraham or Michael Medved, whatever. The commentator asked, they said, well, how can you be so upset over 1,800 kids that are going back to their parents when you support Planned Parenthood that basically kills 300,000 to 400,000 kids, in our view, a year? And this lefty looks at him and goes, well, Planned Parenthood is just helping women exercise their rights to choose. Because we have a law called Roe versus Wade. Think about that, folks. So here's a lefty saying that we have a law, Roe versus Wade, which allows women to choose whether or not to have an abortion. But the same lefty is sitting there talking about how the laws that govern, signed by a Democrat, Clinton, the laws that govern separation of kids at the border if they don't arrive at a legal checkpoint, and if they're with folks and ICE doesn't think that they are related, that law should not be followed. I found the paradox. It was like I looked at the screen and shook my head. That's how hypocritical it is. It's just unbelievable. So Roe versus Wade is the law and therefore can't be questioned. Immigration law is not the law because we don't agree with it and therefore should be ignored. Okay, gotcha. Not a problem. By the way, the two of the previously unidentified anti-Trump, pro-Hillary FBI investigators, one is the name of Sally Moyer, and the other, the name is Kevin Kleinsman. By the way, who happened to be having an affair, just like Strzok and Page. That's pretty, must be kind of sexy over there at the FBI headquarters, I guess. Yeah. All right. I brought you a segment. I brought you almost a whole show on what states were in the red. Just put in financial crisis states or financial states, and you can listen to that show. I go over the most sovereign states, the least insolvent states, etc. And I told you in one of those shows, because I believe it spanned two, I told you about the Obama Library, which, number one, Obama did a bait and switch. Number two, he's taking public parkland on the river. And number three, I told you it was going to cost the state of Illinois, who is absolutely broke. They can't even make their current payments, folks. They can't even make their current payments. $16 billion in the hole on current operating expenses. I told you it was going to cost the state $100 million to help Obama put up the Obama Library. I was wrong. I'm so sorry. $224 million of Illinois taxpayer money in a state that is absolutely broke. And, of course, this money was voted on and approved by progressives, the same progressives that ran the state into the ground to begin with. And there's another little interesting tidbit. And this happens to do, and this is going to kind of tie in with a China article if we get there. But at the same time that they're giving $224 million to, or on behalf of Obama, to build the Obama Library, which sounds to me more like a mosque, by the way. Oh, gee, did I say that? How un-PC of me. The Illinois pension funds, and I've done several shows, just type pension funds into the search bar. You can listen to them. Pension funds are underwater. They are, pretty much toast in virtually every state, but particularly in Illinois and California. Basically, I think I have the exact stats here for you. where did they go? Well, why don't we just say it's kind of ugly. There is, I got so much papers here, I can't even find them. Bottom line is, Illinois is like 17 years in the hole on their pension funding. In other words, 17 years of pension payments for all the retired workers is like not there. Yet they're spending $224 million on Obama's non-presidential library and taking away a 15-acre park on the lake from the public to do so. Which brings us to the next story. Hillary Clinton. You know, I did a series of shows on Hillary Clinton's victims. All the people who have mysteriously died under really mysterious circumstances, either right before they're supposed to testify, or if they were involved in some type of, if they knew too much and were involved in some type of dispute, some type of wrinkle with the Clintons. And at the time I did that show, I believe there were 47 victims, many of them back in the 80s during the Whitewater scandal days of the Clintons in Arkansas. And then over the last year, there's been another five, including Seth Richards and his buddy, the other IT guy. Well, it just came out that there's two more victims. I'll let you connect the dots. So the FBI agent who exposed Hillary Clinton's cover-up of the email server of the Clinton Foundation, etc. He was just found dead this past week. Now, here's something odd about this. His wife was also found dead next to him. He was shot with his service revolver, as was she. There are two unaccounted for rounds. They don't know where they went. And he was stabbed multiple times, and they're trying to pass this off as suicide. So let me see. He stabbed himself multiple times, fired two rounds out the window, I guess, and then killed his wife and himself. Okay. This just so happened to occur the day before he was supposed to testify on Hillary Clinton's cover-ups to a U.S. federal grand jury, I might add. And his testimony was going to be that Hillary Clinton acted illegally to protect the Obama administration crimes, including the Fast and Furious scandal. Huh. Pretty amazing, huh? But that's not all, folks. As they say, there's more to the story. The rest of the story. To go back a little bit, Fast and Furious was the deal where 2,000 lethal weapons were simply let go to the Mexican drug cartels. And a federal agent was killed with those guns. And God only knows how many other people were killed with those guns. They were never marked, unlike the same moronic thing that George Bush did. I mean, at least those guns were marked so they could be tracked. These guns were not marked. My personal opinion is it's part of the gun control push. They were hoping they would come back into the United States and be used for heinous crimes. And then the Democrats could say, oh, ban assault weapons and all the rest of the stuff that they do. But the other thing that this guy Rayner was investigating was the death of another FBI agent. His name was Detective Dean Suter, also a long-term veteran, 18-year veteran of FBI. Suter, by the way, was mysteriously gunned down in November of 2017. That's just 6 months ago. And you know what? He was gunned down the day before he was set to testify to a grand jury on Clinton-related matters. Now, what are the odds of that, folks? What are the odds of two head FBI investigators, the first about to testify to a grand jury on Clinton matters, and the second about to testify to a grand jury on Clinton murders, who is also the lead investigator on the, we'll call it mysterious, death of the first agent? What are the odds of that? What are the odds of the police not being able to track down a killer, having no clues, you name it, on either deal? What are the odds? What are the odds? The odds are pretty, pretty low. Let me quote. Special Agent Rayner was leading, you're going to love this, U.S. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein's and FBI Director Christopher Wray's investigation into the murder of Detective Sean Suter, the guy who was killed in November, and Fast and Furious. Let me quote. These guns were involved in the murder of a U.S. federal officer, among others, and is seen by investigators as the Achilles heel of the Obama regime because the murder of Border Patrol agent Brian Terry is one of but a very few Obama administration crimes that have no statute of limitations, as it involved the killing of a U.S. federal officer, unquote. It must all be coincidence, don't you think? All right. By the way, another little tidbit that came out this week. So Hillary Clinton, when she was, quote unquote, interrogated by the FBI, we're not going to go there, but the IG testified, if you go through his testimony, that Hillary, quote, discussed pregnancy and babies during the majority of the 2.5-hour FBI interview because one of her lawyers was pregnant at the time. Remember that the other folks who should have been targets and subjects, except targets and subjects were never named, were her personal attorney Cheryl Mills and Uma Abedin, and they were allowed to sit in the interview. I mean, it's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So that's what we got for our taxpayer buck. We got the discussion of pregnancies in the interrogation of Hillary Clinton. That's just great. Let's talk about emerging markets, the debt crisis in emerging markets. Every 10 to 20 years, it's clockwork. There is a crisis. And it has to do with emerging markets. It would be in 1987, I believe. Excuse me, 1982 was the first EM, emerging market crisis. And basically, it was instigated, it was fused, it was kindled by the collapse of Argentina, Brazil, and Chile. They're called the ABC debtors. And Nicholas Brady, he was the Treasury Secretary at the time, he concocted some spit and bubble gum thing and got the world through that crisis. The next crisis was in Mexico in 1994. The next crisis was in Thailand in 1997, and it became kind of a contagion. It spread to Malaysia, Indonesia, South Korea, and Russia, and caused a Greenwich, Connecticut, big, big hedge fund called Long-Term Capital Management, LTCM, to almost go under. Basically, a bunch of big banks had to step in along with the government and shore up LTCM for billions and billions of dollars. Kind of like the Lehman Brothers deal. Now, the EMs did not get into big trouble in the 2000-2008 crisis because the EMs, after the several crises before that, had started kind of salting away a savings account to pay their debts, called their reserve funds. Unfortunately, because of the policies of the Fed, raising interest rates, tightening up money supply, all the things I've talked about here over the last 4 weeks, money is flowing into the United States at a record rate. This is the best return on the planet, if you are that type of investor, buying U.S. Treasury bonds. Everybody else, I mean, Europe is still in 0% interest rates or negative interest rates. Now, do you want to buy a European bond that's making negative 0.4% or United States Treasury that's paying, I think, 1.6 or whatever it's paying right now? I mean, that's not a hard choice, right? It's a pretty big differential, like, I think, 600%. Yeah, just about 600%. However, we're now entering a time period where all the chickens are coming home to roost once again. Oh, I just found my Illinois pension thing. Yeah, this is a little bit disjointed. I apologize, folks, but I want to come back to this very quickly. Illinois pensions. Let's take a look at one city in Illinois, shall we? A city by the name of Harvey, Illinois. 20% unemployment. Property taxes are over 5%. Home values have declined 80% over the last decade, and they have 1 year of pension on supply against a 50-year liability. Quote, by the way, this was a report by Lombardi, who's kind of a specialist in this area. Quote, a study of the 649 different pension funds found systemic problems with the assumption underlying many trusts. This will have profound effects on citizens of all 50 states. In short, a pension crisis is in the works. But they're going to go out and spend $224 million for Barry's non-library. Gotcha. All right. On the EM crisis, after that little trip down pension lane, on the EM crisis, you basically have countries getting in trouble again. In this case, it's Venezuela. I mean, they've already defaulted on debt. Mexico, because of the turmoil down there. To a lesser extent, Brazil, Chile, Argentina. It's kind of like a repeat of the early 90s. You know, we're on that 20-year cycle of the late 90s. The bottom line is that there is bad stuff kind of brewing in the emerging markets of the world. And it's going to affect United States banks because guess who has lent all these emerging market countries lots and lots and lots of money? Oh, yeah, the SIFIs, the too big to fail banks that I keep telling you, make sure you don't have a dime in them. Wells Fargo, Chase, Citicorp, you name it. There is, let me see if I can find this exact number for you. Yes, it's been 20 years since the last EM debt crisis, so it's right on track on its roughly 20-year cycle. The reserves of these countries, and by the way, Turkey is in serious trouble. Ukraine's in serious trouble. I mean, there's a number of emerging market countries that are in serious, serious trouble where their reserves are less than 1 year. In other words, their ability to pay debt is down to 1 year. 1 year. So, Turkey's debt, for instance, is 106% of its available reserves. I mean, Turkey's broke. And they can't go out and print money like, you know, the United States prints money. They don't have a reserve. They're not the reserve currency of the world. Argentina's ratio of debts and deficits to reserves, in other words, their debts to deficits to reserves, is over 120%. Venezuela is 100%. I can go on down the list. All these chickens are going to come home to roost, folks. And it's going to affect basically everything you do. Let me read something to you. Quote, the problem is not individual sovereign defaults. Those are bound to occur. The problem is contagion. History shows that once a single nation defaults, creditors lose confidence in other emerging markets. Those creditors begin to cash out investments in EMs, emerging markets, across the board, and a panic begins. A full-blown EM debt crisis is coming soon. It's likely to start in Turkey, Argentina, or Venezuela, but it won't end there. The panic will quickly affect Ukraine, Chile, Poland, South Africa, and the other weak links in the chain. And then the last paragraph, which I'll quote for you. The IMF will soon run out of lending resources, that's the International Monetary Fund, and will have to pass the hat among the richer members. But the Europeans will have their own problems. Remember I was talking about that, 20 minutes ago? You have the problems in England. You have the problems in Germany where they're about to throw out Merkel, thank God. You have the problems in Italy. You have portions of Spain wanting to succeed. I mean, I can go down the list. The European Union is a mess. In fact, it's really no longer. It's the European countries. There's no longer European Union. So let me finish it with this paragraph. The IMF will soon run out of lending resources and will have to pass the hat amongst the richer neighbors. But the Europeans will have their own problems. And the U.S. under President Trump is likely to reply, America first, and decline to participate. That means the IMF will have to resort to printing trillions of dollars in special drawing rights, SDRs, to reliquify a panicked world. I've done articles on the SDRs, folks. You should type them in the search bar and listen to them. Italy, by the way, yes, you're right. You happen to be right, Miss Producer. For those of you who want to understand this perfect storm, you have these emerging markets with less than 1 year's reserve, a bunch of emerging markets like Turkey, 60% underwater. I mean, it's like owning your house. You have a $160,000 mortgage and you got a $100,000 house. I kind of give you the idea. Okay. But along with this, you have this kind of storm brewing in Europe. We talked about Italy. and we've talked about Britain and the Brexit. We've talked about Germany, where Merkel's about to get thrown out all over the migrant crisis. We've talked about the migrant crisis itself, which is a huge problem for Europe. And a huge problem for Europe's financial stability, obviously. You have a very low growth in Europe. In fact, if you go back to the year 2000, which was only 1 year after the euro dollar was introduced, which was 1999, the United States economy was only 13% larger than all of Europe, the eurozone. By 2016, it was 26% larger, and now is almost 30% larger. And the eurozone economies, folks, are faltering yet again. There's a guy, and by the way, it's all about their globalist nonsense over there. You know, the European Union and their corrupt delegates in Brussels. There's a very famous economist by the name of Stiglitz. And what he says about the euro right now is, quote, if one country does poorly, blame the country. If many countries are doing poorly, blame the system. All right. So that's what's happening in, and by the way, the trade war, which is kind of shaping up now between the United States and European trading partners, that's not going to help Europe at all either. So you have kind of the perfect storm coming together here. So with that little bit of cheerful news, why don't we get into some fascinating, I wouldn't call it news, how about revelations? Let's talk about mind control. You know, last week, and I think you'll find it pretty, or actually several weeks ago, you just type it in mind control, and you will hear that show. Got a lot of really great feedback on that. That show was pretty much about where mind control is at right now. It's evolved through many different stages, and it's now what's called voice-to-skull control, where using microwaves or radio waves, memory can be erased, suggestions implanted, actions controlled. And particularly in susceptible personalities, personalities that may be influenced by drugs, personalities that may have some type of disorder. Think about the types of people who have been involved in these mass shootings. With almost without exception, putting aside the Islamist extremists, that's a different breed of cat. All of these people were prime mind control suspects. What I found fascinating about all that is how advanced this mind control thing really is. Let me jump back like 2 years. So about 2 years ago, I read this article. I forget which periodical it was in. I've lost track of all the stuff I read. To bring you these shows, to bring you information that nobody else does, to bring you the news behind the news. And I read this article, and it was kind of obscure, but it was talking about how the Russians were experimenting with mind control, or psychosogenic weaponry, as they call it. And it got me thinking. It got me thinking in the context of some of the unexplained events, even back to Kennedy's assassination. It got me thinking about these mass shootings and the anti-gun, disarm the population agenda of the left, and therefore, unfortunately, of the deep state. Anyway, it got me thinking, and I've been collecting information on it here, there, yither, and yon for the last 2 years. And in the last several months, I've really done some research. So listen to that show of several weeks ago. Once again, type mind control into the search bar on the website. And that will give you a good feel of how far mind control has come. And it's come a long way. This voice-to-skull technology is pretty frightening. Pretty frightening. And to give you an idea of what they're able to accomplish, just as some background, because then I want to get into how this all started back in the 1950s, maybe even before then. It's really a fascinating story. And how Russia and America have collaborated on this. I mean, it's unbelievable. Using voice-to-skull technology, that is, the transmission of certain frequencies, microwaves, radio waves, etc., into susceptible humans, where there is, it appears from what I've been reading, where there is some type of suggestive component in a person's mind, some type of, I wouldn't call it disorder, but some type of imbalance which can be taken advantage of, either in a personality or in a mind, or a mind has been altered or weakened by the use of psychosomatic, and I probably mispronounced that, I'm not a MD, drugs. Remember, the mass shooters, almost all of them were on some type of, I'll just call it psychodrug, some type of psychodrug. And I have often said, if you put their pictures together, they all have the same look. I mean, that same kind of weird, vacant stare. You know, it just catches your attention. If you saw one of these guys walking down the street, you'd think to yourself, well, that guy's a weirdo. So, anyway, and they all talked about having voices in their heads. Virtually all of them. So, it's really interesting. A lot of dots. But to give you an idea of what they've been able to accomplish, dubious accomplishments, I'll grant you, but nonetheless, with this voice-to-skull technology, they've been able to accomplish reduced changes to hearing. Hidden violent itching inside eyelids. Force manipulation of arms and legs. Racing heart. Remotely induced violent, and this is really small print, I'm reading off a diagram from this FOIA document that came out of the CIA, mistakenly, I might add. Listen to that last show. Externally controlled and forced speech. Forced mudding. And I'm sorry, I can't read it. Special attention, pain, orgasm, or intense pain to the genital areas. So they've been able to induce with this mind control orgasms. Boy, people might buy it. Intense general pain, hot needle flashes in the extremities, legs, particularly the hips and the ankles. This will just give you a few ideas of what they've been able to accomplish with this stuff. This is documented. I mean, if they can induce remotely, I mean, this is from far away, with the right frequency, radio wave, microwave, whatever, an orgasm or pain or itching in your eyelids or, you know, any physiological reaction, all of which, by the way, is stimulated by the brain, right, and by your central nervous system, then imagine what they can do in terms of manipulating the memory and making suggestions and controlling actions. And this, by the way, is, you can look up more of this particular diagram, because it's just tough reading, in Muckrock, Muckrock, Psychoelectronic Weapon Effects, EM Effects on the Human Body. So that's where it's at, folks. That's where it's at. But where did it start? It started way back in either the late 40s or early 50s. Most researchers tend to peg it to the Korean War. So there were about 7,000 soldiers, American soldiers, taken prisoner in the Korean War that were shipped up to the Manchurian border. You ever hear the expression, the Manchurian candidate? That's where it came from. And these soldiers were put in re-education camps where they were sleep-deprived, where there were loudspeakers constantly blaring the same propaganda over and over and over again, where they weren't allowed to read anything. They were forced to sit in classrooms and listen to lecture after lecture after lecture for up to 15 hours a day for years. And this was the first attempt, we think, of mass brainwashing. And it was pretty effective, because the majority of those 7,000 U.S. soldiers in the North Korean/Chinese Manchurian re-education camps started spewing propaganda on behalf of the Chinese and the North Koreans before they were ever out of captivity. And if you watch the films of them, I don't know how else to say it. They have that same kind of blank look that these mass shooters do. I mean, they kind of talk in an Ottoman voice. It's not the type of voice that you hear in a modern-day captive whom you know is being put up to it by the Iranians or whoever it happens to be. I mean, where they say, yes, well, America's bad and blah, blah. I mean, you can just tell. These soldiers are almost like robots. I mean, almost like robots. And a large majority of these 7,000 soldiers, when they were released, did not have the usual, as you'd expect, reaction of we're released, the war's over, we're going home. It was, you know, we're being forced to go to a place we don't like and which is unjust and has the wrong form of government and blah, 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 blah. And a number of them, it's been now documented, became kind of like sleeper cells, sleeper agents, and actually were programmed and did go out and form kind of communist parties, if you will, little mini communist parties around the United States when they got home. And at that time, it wasn't called mind control. It was called brain warfare. So that's pretty much where it started. And, of course, we were deeply immersed in the Cold War then, or shortly thereafter. And Eisenhower was really fascinated and a bit petrified of this whole brain wars thing. And get this, that's where the CIA, the Central Intelligence Agency, was established. It was established out of Ike's concern over brain warfare. And I'm sure there were other reasons too, but it was a key underpinning in his formation of the agency. And the agency pretty much ran amok. I mean, what's different, right? The agency pretty much ran amok because, you know, anything in the name of national security during the Cold War period when most Americans were sure the nukes were going to fly between Russia and the United States. Anyway, the CIA, it turns out, and Naval Intelligence, which is basically an adjunct of the CIA or vice versa. I mean, one was born of the other. In 1960, they began mind control research in earnest. I mean, they focused in on it. They funded over 100 different outfits from major universities to well-known and lesser-known researchers who were known to be in this field. And what the CIA was trying to do was to figure out how to do their own Manchurian candidates. The soldiers which came out of the Manchurian camps, the re-education camps, were called Manchurian candidates. And the CIA was interested in planting American Manchurian candidates in enemy communist countries. In fact, there was one plan, it seems, where they were going to try and plant Manchurian candidates of some way, shape, or form in the Russian nuclear forces. And these agents would be programmed to kind of collapse any Russian first strike or counterstrike in the event of nuclear war. I mean, it's, you know, you kind of shake your head, but this is real stuff. This was going on. Back in 1953, military intelligence and naval intelligence, and then it was all passed to the CIA in 1960, started experimenting with implants, electrical implants and other types of implants in brains, hypnosis, drugs, repetitive suggestion, kind of like what the Chinese and North Koreans did in the re-education camps during the Korean War. And these were projects that were done internally within the military with help from outside outfits. when the CIA took over in 1960, when they took over mind control research, they actually farmed out this stuff 100% to these, should we say, private sector outfits. One of the earliest experimental forms of the drugs, by the way, was with sodium pentothal. And that was called Project Bluebird. There were two projects, Project Bluebird and Project Artichoke. And there were a few others with seemingly innocuous names. And the sodium pentothal was used in conjunction with hypnosis, was used in conjunction with pain, sleep deprivation. I mean, they tried all sorts of things. They thought sodium pentothal might be the psycho-warfare drug of choice. But it didn't. They couldn't get the results out of it. Only 1 in 20 subjects kind of were they able to erase memory and plant suggestion or replace memory or create a dual personality, one of which would act on the command and the other, after the act was done, would not remember what the act was. It's just bizarre stuff. This all kind of evolved into a project called MK Ultra. Now, it starts to get pretty sinister here. MK Ultra, this is in the 60s. The drug that MK Ultra thought was the end-all, be-all, perhaps, for mind control, since sodium pentothal hadn't worked out, was lysergic acid dimethylide. We also know it as LSD. That's right. LSD, folks, came from the military. Interesting, huh? And LSD, for those of you who know or have heard, it makes one, if you take a dose, depending upon the dose and all that kind of stuff, I think they called them tabs back in the day, it would make you kind of psychotic and disoriented and disorganized. And the CIA actually used the drug in political enemies to discredit them. And not only political enemies, but, international enemies. You know, let's say there was a really bright guy doing something for the Russians. You know, the CIA would one way, shape, or form get some LSD in him. He wouldn't appear so brilliant. And then the propaganda machine could discredit him. Does all this kind of sound familiar to some things that are going on today? It's like eerie. Even though this is 60 years ago, right? 60 years ago. So on the MK Ultra project, you're going to love this. At that time, the entire supply of LSD was manufactured by a Swiss company and held by the Swiss government. They would not allow it out. The CIA got a couple doses here and there, you know, or whatever they worked out with the Swiss government. But other than that, it was pretty much under a Swiss lock and key. Well, the CIA, because they thought LSD was going to be like the answer to mind control and mind warfare, they got concerned because, you know, what if Switzerland was overrun by the communists, or maybe somebody would buy all the supplies, and, you know, I mean, they just went through their ritual. So the CIA secretly paid Eli Lilly, the drug company, $400,000. Now remember, this is 60 years ago. This is like the same as, you know, probably $40 million today. Certainly $10 million today. They paid Eli Lilly $400,000 for a whole bunch of LSD doses. In other words, LSD kind of pirated the recipe from the Swiss. And then the CIA had a great reservoir of LSD for all their experiments. And the guy they hired to run these tests was a doctor by the name of Gottlieb, who also, by the way, was experimenting with radioactive drugs, also for mind control purposes. They never did pan out. But, I mean, this guy was kind of wild. And Gottlieb put together a research team. To get on the research team, you had to agree that without you knowing, any member of the team could feed the other member of the team LSD at any time and observe their reactions under certain stress tests and situations and that kind of stuff. I mean, it was kind of bizarre. They were like using each other as guinea pigs. They eventually branched out, by the way, and began to use civilian subjects without the civilian subjects' knowledge and began to observe them. Now, Gottlieb obviously was like a little out there, right? So not only could the staff test each other unwittingly and then also use unwitting civilian guinea pigs to see what was going on, they actually went to the point, the CIA actually established safe houses. And they would bring mobsters that I guess the FBI caught, and pimps and prostitutes, what they called the underworld, to these safe houses, pretty much locked them up there, and then feed them these drugs and observe the reactions. In other words, they were using human guinea pigs for this research. They also put out a call on a very limited basis for test subjects, because one of the things they wanted to gauge was, okay, if you give this stuff along with whatever other little mind control tricks you were doing, if you give this stuff to somebody and they don't know it, is the reaction going to be different than if you give this stuff to somebody and they know that they're getting the stuff? One of the people who applied to be a guinea pig, a knowing guinea pig for LSD experimentation for mind control purposes by the CIA, was a guy by the name of Timothy Leary. Now, you baby boomers, I know you remember his name, right? He was like the father of LSD, Woodstock, you name it. He was a professor at Harvard University. He had another assistant professor with him. That guy's pretty much irrelevant. But Timothy Leary became kind of the go-to guy for LSD. And what Timothy Leary discovered is that a lot of these subjects who took the drug willingly enjoyed the experience. I mean, for whatever reason, they liked being, you know, half psychotic. And the drug soon became available on a wide, I mean, it's not that hard to make, on a wide band across the population. And that's where the LSD craze back there in the 60s and 70s, if you remember, I mean, that's where it came from. It came from the military and the CIA and Eli Lilly and originally from the Swiss. I mean, it's really pretty fascinating, I think. One of the people that was on the staff was a researcher, a doctor, a scientist by the name of Frank Olson. And he was given LSD unwittingly. He didn't know about it. So obviously Gottlieb's team knew they were feeding him LSD, but they wanted to see how this team member would react. Well, Frank Olson had a really bad trip. If you remember back in the day, a bad trip, man, it was like, did not go well. And he went into this like psychotic depression, and he was shipped off to a military hospital where supposedly they gave him sedation and all sorts of things to try and bring him down from this trip, and were unsuccessful. And 4 or 5 days after the incident, he committed suicide. Now, here's a little footnote to this. Documents seem to suggest that Frank Olson was about to blow the whistle on what Gottlieb and the CIA were doing with unwitting civilian subjects. That seems to be what all the research and the historians and the doctors who have been researching this, that's a conclusion that they have drawn. He was about to blow the whistle on improper experimentation, and suddenly he has a psychotic trip, and suddenly he goes to a military hospital who supposedly try and save him, and then he supposedly commits suicide. By the way, his suicide was leaping from, I think, the 30th or the 32nd floor of a hotel window in New York. The question is, did he leap or was he pushed? Now, about, I don't know, half an hour ago in one of the segments, I told you about these FBI agents. Two FBI agents, two top guys, longtime vets, the day before they're supposed to go in and testify against Hillary for a variety of things, and against the Obama administration, Holder and Obama, for Fast and Furious, on which there's no statute of limitations, they wind up dead. And they both wind up dead the same way, in the same unexplained circumstance, with no killer yet found. Okay. I don't know about you folks, but, you know, I don't believe in coincidences. So anyway, poor Frank Olson dies. That was kept hidden by the government, by the way, for 20 years. It was 20 years after the death of Frank Olson that the story of Frank Olson and his death came out. By the way, Frank Olson was also one of the top scientists who was working at Camp Dietrich, and his specialty was biological weaponry. Now, perhaps there were experiments going on, I haven't researched it. Maybe there were experiments, unwitting experiments against civilians with the biological stuff. I don't know. But the whole thing is just smacks of deep state nastiness. So, Bob Baer, okay, flash forward. This is 1976 now. Bob Baer is a CIA agent in 1976. And he gets involved kind of as the the field supervisor, kind of the overseer in terms of the practical application of this evolution of mind control research by the CIA and its 100 contractors out there, like all working on this stuff. What he noted was that hypnosis seemed to be the best thing for controlling people's actions. And that hypnotically, anti-Soviet agents could be controlled and they could be directed for assassination. In other words, they could be hypnotized either in general as an assassin, or they could be hypnotized for a specific assassination purpose. There is, at that time it was called, the hypnosis was combined with electric shock, by the way. And by electric shock, I'm talking about really high voltage amps, whatever. Numerous times in a short period of time, one subject was subjected to this electrical shock 105 times in a period of 2 weeks. And at the same time, hypnosis was employed. In other words, the shocking kind of shocked the central nervous system in the brain, which made it more susceptible to the hypnosis control, stimulation, suggestion, etc. And this was called deep patterning. In other words, they were erasing your mind. You know, you call it brainwashing. This was like brain dry cleaning, okay? Anyway, they also began to experiment at that time with barbiturates. In other words, you'd have, you'd feed the subject barbiturates. Then you'd subject them to shock. And that would kind of, as they say in Cool Hand Luke, make their mind right for hypnosis. In other words, it was a staged teardown of memory, mind, and self-control to be replaced by different memory, a different mindset, a different action set, all, of course, directed by the CIA. And then they also started adding in taped loops. In other words, commands, subliminal suggestions, audio stimulation, And they would play these tape loops up to 1,000 times, each taped loop, into these subjects' ears and heads. So they would drug them, then they would shock them, then they'd hypnotize them, and then they'd repeatedly play whatever these loops were. You know, you will kill, you will assassinate Joe. I mean, whatever they are, I don't know. And the records aren't clear. But that was the sequence that they were using. And they were experimenting with different amounts of each of those four components at different times to see which was most effective, etc. There's some really good video on it where they actually film subjects. There's this one gal, I forget her name, but there's this one gal who is subject to all this stuff. And after a four-week period, and she has that same look, right? That same vacant look. They hand her a gun, and her best friend or her boyfriend, I mean, somebody very close to her, is in the room. The gun is loaded with blanks. She doesn't know that. And they direct her to shoot Tom, her boyfriend or her husband, whoever it was. And she gets up from the chair, and she picks up the gun, and you know, with the same vacant look, like, you know, just no emotion, no recognition, no, it's just bizarre. She points the gun at him, pulls the trigger 6 times. There were blanks, obviously, but the poor guy who looks like he was going to fall over in shock, the poor guy didn't get hurt. But the point is that they were at that point in the 70s where, even though rather, it was a lengthy process and a rather barbaric process that involved a lot of steps, the drugs, the shocks, the hypnosis, the play tapes, the play loops. They were at the point where they could get somebody to do something that was entirely out of the character of their original personality. In 1965, they advanced a little bit. And this is, by the way, where this electric shock thing comes in. Because in 1965, the first indication of electrical impulse being able to alter the brain and to direct and command the brain in concert with others of these techniques. There was a Professor Delgado. The CIA funded him. And he implanted 21 electrodes in an 800-pound bull, a bullfighting bull, a ring bull. He implanted 21 electrodes in this bull's brain, and he was actually able to get into the ring with this bull, who's basically trained to kill humans. I mean, it's a bull, the same types of bulls you see in bullfights. And he was able to stop that bull's charge, turn the bull around, have the bull go in circles. It's pretty phenomenal. And there's videos of that, too. And this is what got everybody on the electrical kick, which I believe, and by the way, I'm going to have at least one and maybe two or three more segments on this mind control, because the more I dig, the more I find, and it's all fascinating. I mean, it's fascinating. But there's some really good videos of that, too. I may put them up, may have the producers put them up on the site next week. Gottlieb, by the way, and the folks that were under him and that came after him started getting really bizarre with their experiments. One experiment they did, which once again was hidden from the public for 20 or 30 years, quote unquote classified, was they went into prisons and they selected prison inmates. There's no record of them selecting a female inmate, just male inmates. And they wanted to see how effective and how transformational the sequence of application was. The drugs, the electric, the hypnosis. And they would select male inmates and they would work on them to make them believe they were women. In other words, they wanted to see if they could change the most basic precept of a human's nature. and that is its gender. And they were successful. When they got done with some of these poor inmates, who, of course, were certainly not volunteers, these big, strong men thought they were women and acted as such and could be directed as such. Pretty scary stuff. That continued, by the way, into the 70s. One of the... They got to the point after this... After they successfully induced male prison inmates to believe that their sexual orientation was 180 degrees from what they really were, they began, and they also called this Project Artichoke. They wanted to see, I want you to think about this now for a minute, they wanted to see if they could take a typical 35-year-old well-educated male of foreign origin, put him through these paces, and have him emerge on the other side as a controlled assassin. Kind of interesting. It's particularly interesting, by the way, if you think about some of the things that happened shortly after this time period. Coming into more recent times, after the Department of Homeland Security was formed, the Russians, who have also been working hard on mind control, mind warfare, have a special research station set up actually in Moscow. And the DHS learned that the Russians had stumbled on some type of sequence, some type of procedure, some type of... mind-altering pattern that was highly effective. And DHS, the Department of Homeland Security, actually went to Russia. And this is fairly recent. And either, it's very tough to find out information on this, but they either developed jointly or the DHS purchased from the Russians a program called Mind Reader 2.0 technology. And this technology actually gauges people's reaction to subliminal messages, pictures, and sounds. And DHS believes that it can help them catch, it's like a screening mechanism. It can help them catch terrorists in airports and at other points. Because a terrorist will react differently to these subliminal audio-visual stimuli than somebody who is not a terrorist. I'm going to have more on this next week for you. A lot more, because it's pretty fascinating. And it ties in with some stories I've been reading in the past 2 months. I don't know if you folks have or not. And that is that they are installing experimental face reading machines now in certain airports, face scanners. And the bottom line is that you have to go through this face scanner to go through security. And in my mind, there has to be a link between these two things, this Mind Reader 2.0 that DHS got from the Russians and this sudden commencement of installation of quote-unquote face scanners. I think the two are linked, but I don't know. I don't know. More research. One of the interesting things that one of the writers talks about, who was involved with the CIA on all this stuff, he surmises that with the tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars, I mean, the multi-millions of dollars that was spent, he believes that there are dozens and perhaps hundreds of mind-altered CIA-controlled or military-controlled people on the streets of the world that have been programmed by the CIA to do X, Y, and Z, whatever X, Y, and Z is, and in whatever location, I can't tell you. But this is a guy who was involved in the program. And his calculations are simple, since he saw the program at work. He knows how long it took them to completely transform a susceptible person and or mind. He knows how much it costs. He takes the total amount of money that went toward it, and he goes, there has to be dozens, if not hundreds, of these controlled agents on the streets. So, I'm not sure whether that is cheerful or not for you folks, but I do find it fascinating. And the evolution from the electric shock, barbiturates, LSD, you name it, hypnosis, that all seems to have become focalized now in this kind of mind-reading technology that they're beginning to deploy. And it's become definitely focused in this voice-to-skull. I mean, like the latest version of mind control from remote location. So, I hope you found that as interesting as I did in researching it for you. But I think we're going to hear a lot more about this in the future. I think this is just kind of the tip of the iceberg for many countries, not just for the United States. And I am actually a little bit early, so I will atone for last week's sins. And we're going to go over our China segment next week, very possibly another mind control segment, depending upon how much research I get done between now and then. And I'm sure that there will be a barrel full of news. I mean, absolutely positively guaranteed, a barrel full of news between now and then. So you have a great kind of last week of June. And this is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. We'll talk at you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.